All right, greetings, welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 140, coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling. Thanks for joining us here on the Watchdog Network or wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever it is you listen, we are here. Better's Last Stand, welcome back into the show. Another exciting week as we get 1 week closer to regular season football. At least that makes most people excited, not me so much, but for the sake of the show, we'll continue to make that a main topic here on the agenda for this afternoon. So we're going to get into the AFC and NFC North today. We've already previewed all the college conferences, the power conferences, the ones that really matter, because like it or not, it's really tough for the little guys to actually get into the playoff or get a piece of the pie. So we concentrate mainly on the big schools that people love to follow. And we have all those picks live on BLS underscore PRP on X. So if you missed any of them from our four main conferences, get over there, check them out before it's too late. We've done pretty well with football futures over the last, high school. We don't do those. We do those on the show for fun only during the week. So check us out on Mondays at our Football Fridays, which will be kicking up next week here on the Watchdog Network. So don't forget about that. We got high school football coming your way, Wheeling Central, Wheeling Park, and John Marshall. We can hear all their games right here on the Watchdog Network, along with the Mountaineers each and every Saturday, right here on the Watchdog Network or watchdognetwork.com. So get on over there, check that stuff out. But as I was saying, high school plays, we have the Duggar Saucy Spread Challenge. Those are for fun only. But our college plays are all up at BLS underscore PRP. So you can get those on there. We did not do as well in college last year as we did in pros. So we'll keep it going, hopefully, in the pros and in college and have a little bit of a bounce back. You know what? We weren't terrible, but we weren't. Definitely weren't as good as we'd like to be. Last week, we weren't as good as we'd like to be either, but we were improved from the week before. So last week, up 24.25 units, so a solid week for us. Golf, we were actually respectable for the first time in a while. Sam Burns, Ludwig Auber, and Victor Hovland all hovered around the lead last week. So that's something that will it makes it a little bit easier when there's not that many guys in the field. So anyway, but we did cash a couple of decent price tickets on those guys. So we'll take them, and we were actually above the equator in golf this week for the first time in probably a few weeks, because it's not been an easy go of it lately. Another winning week in the AFL Australian rules. If I would just stick to just Australian rules football, I could probably be a professional with this. Problem is, that's hard to do, and probably would be better suited to just do that. Maybe I'll just move to Australia and handicap these games and make it my profession. But we were 12-6 last week, 138-97 run, we're up to nearly 60% for the year. So pretty good run continues here since May. It's been good. We've been doing pretty well in six games above 500 last week, including if you played Brisbane Lions on the money line, and I think we had one other that was a dog that won outright for us last week. But so we're clicking pretty well with AFL still. CFL, finally to the good in the CFL. 4-3, we'll take it at this point. We were 4-0 in sides, so we had the right teams pegged in every single game. We were 0-3 on the totals, so need some work in the totals department. NASCAR, Bowman, Logano, Barry, Keselowski, and Suarez all cash tickets for us, but wasn't good enough. Could not get home with a victory as Austin Dillon repeats at Richmond. Did not expect that to happen. He was locked in, though, and good strategies by his pit crew gets him into the playoffs. But we were up nearly five units in NASCAR. Big Three, another good week there. Too bad that's coming to an end. We only got one game left. 3-1 on the week, 29-14, 67% on the season. And soccer, we started off pretty cold last week, 2 weeks ago, but this past week, 15-14-2, so right around the benchmark. Now, last year, if you remember, early on, I'd say probably the first 6 to 7 weeks of soccer season, we were kind of treading water. And then we went on a massive hot run towards the end of the season, and we pretty much sustained it all the way up until June, late May and June. It was really a product of just taking in as much data as you can, watching as many matches as you can, and starting to really understand the teams and the strengths and the weaknesses. And it benefited us quite a bit. And we had a really good performance in soccer. I have to go out and actually pull our numbers, but we were well into the 60% with our plays week in and week out in the EPL and the various other leagues, the Champions League and so forth. So it may start out a little chilly, but we will persevere. I'm pretty confident in that. I feel already a little bit more confident this week and watching matches last week to a high degree, and we can hopefully start to get into the over 55% category where we can start to lock in a little bit of a profit. But nonetheless, up 24.25 units on the week for last week, so not too bad as we head into our second to last week of August. Pro football has 1 week of preseason left, and then it is a week off, and then it's time for regular season. And college football begins this week with week zero. We'll talk about that later in the show. Let's hit on some baseball right now. This pendulum in baseball continues to swing. It's crazy. So last week I'm saying, Red Sox, Rangers are starting to play a little bit better. Things are starting to go well. Well, not anymore. Red Sox still hanging in. They're still in a playoff spot right now. Still several games clear of Seattle. I think they're a game clear of Seattle, but they're safely in right now. A couple games, maybe three and a half up on Kansas City. So they're all right. The Yankees actually went ahead of them, but the Yankees are playing Tampa in their own stadium right now, down in Tampa, their spring training stadium. So they'll probably win that series and be pretty good. But we you got to remember some of these matchups of these teams, and don't get too excited about the Yankees because they're still a total bust. But you had some teams make runs last week and push themselves into contention. You got Cleveland back in contention. You got the Royals back in contention playing good baseball. The Reds continue to stay around. And the Red Sox, Rangers, Astros, and Mariners have all hit various skids over the last few days. I'm hoping that as this pendulum swings, all these teams have had bad runs earlier this year and then have swung back. So the important part here is to hope that we can catch the upswing towards the very tail end of September, the middle of September. You don't want to do it too late before it will be too late. So maybe in the next week to 10 days, when you get into September, hopefully the pendulum swings back. Texas, Red Sox, Astros, Mariners all start to heat back up again. The Yankees will cool down. I don't know if the Royals or the Tribe can hang around. I do think the Reds will hang. Cubs, big win yesterday for them. Big doubleheader victory because they were kind of leaking oil, if you ask me, and they were going to get tracked down by the Reds as they got blown past by the Brewers, and now the Cubs to me are just an average team. I don't think that. That they're going to be a playoff team. They may hang on. They may just be too far ahead, but they just don't strike me as a team that would scare a whole lot of people at this point. But we'll see. Mets and Padres both up and down once again. It's just crazy, these teams. I mean, you get in on them, then they fall apart. You get out on them, and then they come alive. We shall see. Keep an eye on. We're going to ride out what we got. We're not going to add anything right now in baseball. But I still think there's a lot more baseball to be played, and some of these teams are going to be swinging on the back up, I would imagine. I think that they'll start to get things righted. I don't expect the Yankees to be one of those teams, that is for sure. All right, WNBA, the Mystics. Oh, man, this team. Talked about them for a potential playoff spot. They are wildly inconsistent. Terrible loss the other night at home against the Sun. I mean, just the losses they have are so stunning. And then they come back and they beat a good team. Just wildly inconsistent, and you can't count on that. So it's going to be tough to back them. Seattle Storm, I think, are a team that could fall out of the playoffs too. They're really not very good. The more you watch them, they're not very good. The Fever are a mess right now. Sophie Cunningham now out for the year. They are in big trouble. They have very little guard play left. Keep signing people off the street. They're just going to run out of bodies here at some point. Caitlin Clark's not even going to be able to save them because they're not going to have any supporting cast. Even if she does come back, still got the Sparks in potential playoff spot. The Aces now have kicked it into gear. They're going to be safely in. But I think Seattle is very vulnerable. I think the Mystics could be in trouble. The Valkyries probably hang on. So it's going to really come down to the Mystics, the Sparks, the Storm. Who's going to get that last spot there? I think I might lean the Sparks at this point because they do score some points. They got to be a little better on defense. Big Three basketball, as we said, 3-1 last week, 29-14 on the year, 67%. Let's talk about that game. We got the final game coming up on Saturday in Orlando. And this is an interesting game. Or I'm sorry, it's Sunday at 2 o'clock. And you got Chicago and Miami. Total is 96.5. Miami is laying 2.5 in this game. The Triplets beat the Riot last week, 50-38. We hit both sides of that. We had the Triplets in the under. We told you that the Riot were a product of Dwight Howard at an inflated number. It shouldn't have been favored, and we had that in the under in that game. Then the Miami 305, we did have Dallas plus the 2.5. They got beat by 3, so that's a tough one. We did have the over in that one. It went over by a point, 50-47. They beat Dallas. That is Miami. The Triplets won the matchup in the regular season, 50-41. Montrezl Harrell has just been so hard to stop. He is just so good for Chicago. This Nasir Core has really played well. He's really their only real guard, so he's really the only real guy that can beat anybody off the dribble, but he's been really good. Amir Johnson, who's been a pretty good body inside, rebounding, defending, and then he can step out and shoot the three a little bit too. So Dr. J's done a nice job with this team, and I like them again. I think Chicago should be favored in this game, and I think they're a 2.5-point dog, and I like them to win this game straight up, but you can't take the 2.5 as well. Michael Beasley's been incredible for Miami. Can't take anything away from him. He's been really good. Mario Chalmers looks really old to me. Lance Stevenson is very edgy. He plays with a serious swag. Not that good of a player, but he is very tough, and he will not back down from any of these players on the Chicago team. So Michael Cooper's got his hands full. I think Dr. J's team gets the job done. So we're going with Chicago and under in the Big 3 final on Sunday. Jumping over to golf. Not much to talk about here. It's the Tour Championship. I'm actually happy golf season's over. It's just not been a very fun year. It's just Scheffler. A few tickets we cashed, not very many. Maybe that's why I haven't enjoyed it. The majors weren't all that exciting, other than maybe the U.S. Open that had some drama to it. Rory McIlroy won the Masters, which is a sham. But we'll go back to the well here. Victor Hovland, he was eighth here last year. He won here 2 years ago. He's 22-1. We had him last week. He played pretty decent, just inconsistent. And then Sam Burns, 12th here. He has a ninth here. He's also 22-1. Those are the two guys I'll take in this very small field. Scottie Scheffler, the plus 160 favorite, followed by Rory McIlroy at plus 750. Fleetwood, Auber, and Russell Henley follow. Yeah, I mean, they don't do the staggered scoring anymore where Scheffler's 10 under to start it, so that makes it a little bit better. Could Matsuyama or Cameron Young or somebody go low? Probably. But I got to tell you, back harping on this note about the Ryder Cup, if the USA takes the big-name players, like the Morikawas and Cantleys and these guys, they're going to lose to that Ryder Cup. The European guys are in such better form right now than the big-name American guys. Like, even JT has played a little bit better this year, but Spieth has not been good. Ricky Fowler's not even going to be in contention for that this year, but maybe the next go-round because his game's starting to come back. But Russell Henley, I mean, I just don't know if you can get wins out of these guys. These Euro guys, I mean, you're going to have a loaded Fleetwood, Auber, Rory McIlroy, Hovland. That's right out of the chute. That's much more impressive than anything America has right now. Then you go down to Robert McIntyre, Sepp Straka, and Justin Rose, who just won. So, I mean, Shane Lowry. I mean, you have a really good European team. So I still think if you can grab Euros at a plus price, kind of an emotional hedge type thing if you're rooting for America, but you have a bet on Europe, at least you have a good consolation, because I think Europe is it's probably going to take care of business pretty good against the United States. So again, BLS_PRP, you can find all the golf plays ahead of time should you choose to play them. All right, let's go to the racing circuit. We got the F1 boys still off. They will be back with the Dutch Grand Prix here in two more weeks. Not this week, but the following week. IndyCar is back this week at the Milwaukee Mile. Good track here. They don't do two races here like they did last year. They're back to the one race format. Pato O'Ward won the first race last year. Scott McLaughlin won the second race. Will Power led some laps in both of these. He led 64 races, or 64 races. He led 64 laps in the second race, and he led 65 in the first one. So Will Power had a really good car both days. He's at 850 plus 850, almost 9-1. You can find Will Power, so we'll be interested in Will Power for sure for Team Penske. So Will Power will be a play this week. Scott Dixon, the always consistent, wildly consistent, as the Mystics are wildly inconsistent, Scott Dixon is wildly consistent. He doesn't need to lead a lot of laps to finish well. He didn't lead any laps in these races last year. He finished second, and he finished 10th. So we'll go with Scott Dixon for probably at least the top five, I would say. And then Scott McLaughlin, who won the race here last year at 6-1. He led 85 laps in that race, and he led 147 in the race that he did not win. So his car obviously set up very, very well, and the Penske team seems to run well here, and I think they probably will again. So we'll go back with Dixon, McLaughlin, and Will Power at the Milwaukee Mile this week in IndyCar racing. As I said, F1 is off. NASCAR Coke Zero 400, final race of the playoffs last week. Austin Dillon leads 107 laps. He did a nice job. His pit crew had a good strategy, and he executed it well. Bubba Wallace led 123 laps, but you had some other guys really get bad luck with the tires. Priest, Reddick, just to name a few. Even Ryan Blaney could have won that race, but Austin Dillon gets the job done. We had a good turnout, though, for our guys, though. Bowman ran well. Logano ran well. Suarez ran well. Barry ran well. Keselowski ran well. So a good performance from us from a NASCAR perspective. Can we continue that here at the Daytona Super Speedway or International Daytona International Speedway? Coke Zero 400, you got basically Alex Bowman is hanging on. He and Tyler Reddick are in the last two playoff spots. Top 16 drivers make it. Everybody else is automatically in already. 14 of the drivers already in. You got two spots left. Tyler Reddick has not won. Alex Bowman has not won. So you got Chris Buescher right behind them in 17th place in a win and in. He has a win and in perspective here. He should be good. He wins. He's in. Priest in 18th. Same thing. Kyle Busch and Ty Gibbs. Those guys, as well as Brad Keselowski, all going to be vying for this. And even can go all the way back to Michael McDowell. Would be an incredible spot for him to pull it out. And he's done it here before. So there's a few prices that I thought were very, very intriguing here. If you remember this race seems to have some crazy chaos too, even more so than the 500. Maybe not as many wrecks, but you get some outside drivers that have not really done a whole lot in their careers who have won here. Harrison Burton won this race last year. He's not even on the circuit anymore, so he's already been demoted back to the minor leagues. But the odds on this were surprising to me. When I saw Denny Hamlin 20-1 in a place where he's really been good. Now, he hasn't won this race. He's won three 500s. He's not won the Coke Zero 400. So can he do it? I don't know, but he's got three wins here. So at 20-1, I think Denny Hamlin is a must-use this week. Chase Briscoe at 28-1, thought he was very interesting. Has had some success running up here in the top 10. I think he has a car that potentially could contend, and we will take a shot at 28-1. Alex Bowman, been on a really hot run. He's got a 14.7 average here, which is really, really good considering there's a lot of wrecks. If you don't finish in the top 10 here, a lot of times you wreck, finish in the 30s. So that brings your average down. So 14.7, very strong. Chris Buescher, 18.8 average. He's 20-1. He's got five top fives here, and he hasn't been racing all that long. So Chris Buescher, a guy to look for here. Kyle Busch has a win. William Byron's got three, including back-to-back 500s. Ryan Blaney has a win here. Those guys, Byron at 14-1, not bad. Blaney at 11-1, a little bit short for me. Chris Bell, not interested. Chase Elliott, he's been all right at these super speedways. I guess you could get involved with him, but I don't love his number at just 14-1. Kyle Busch at 16, that is too low for me, even though he really has to win to get in the playoffs. Brad Keselowski, even a touch low at 14. So I got to try to hunt down a little bit better number on Brad Keselowski, but I think he could be a contender here, although his Daytona numbers aren't great. Ryan Preece, always very good on these long super speedways, 25-1. He will be a use. He has a chance at the playoffs. Austin Cindric, 10-1. He's one of the favorites here. Very low number on him. I can't play him at 10-1. He's a 15.9 average, and he has one here, of course, at the 500. Eric Jones has a win here at 39-1, but it's a little bit too high of a price on him, or too low of a price. Stenhouse at 20-1 can't do it. He's won twice here, but 20-1 is just too low. Michael McDowell, 40-1. I think that makes a lot of sense. He's won here. He's ran well here. He's good on super speedways. 40-1 seems fair. Justin Haley at 65-1. He's won here. He could win this race for sure. 65-1 seems very fair. Ty Dillon, very, very good driver on these super speedways. He's 65-1. I think he has a good chance. But let me just throw a few names out here to you who have finished in the top 10 or 11 here in the Coke Zero 400 in the last few years. Noah Gragson, relatively young guy. Cody Ware has a sixth and a fourth. Currently, Cody Ware is 150-1, and you'll probably find him at 200 or more to one in many places. These super speedways, they even the playing field so much. So you notice how even the longer shots, their odds are greatly reduced because anything can happen here. So Cody Ware, if you're parlaying things for guys to finish in the top 10, maybe throw him in there at some decent plus prices. He's got two in the last 3 years in this night race. BJ McLeod has a seventh place finish. David Reagan, who doesn't race these races anymore, but I wish he would because I always liked playing him. He was a top 10 car regularly at a massive plus price. Daniel Hemric finished ninth here. Corey LaJoie doesn't even run a full circuit anymore. He was 10th here 2 years ago. Ty Dillon, an 11th place finish. As I said, Harrison Burton at like 180-1 last year won this race. And Parker Retzlaff, seventh here 2 years ago. I mean, there's a lot to be said about this. So don't, if a guy is a big price, do not be scared off. You know, if you're looking at a Todd Gilliland or somebody like that, but their prices really aren't as high as they should be. John Hunter Nemechek, you got Cody Ware at 150, BJ McLeod at 150, Riley Herbst at 80, Joey Gase, Casey Mears 200. Throw them in there. Don't be afraid. So again, Briscoe, Bowman, Buescher, Priest, McDowell, Haley, and Dylan. Probably going to play Keselowski. I'm absolutely playing Denny Hamlin. I think at 20-1, that is a steal on the past champion here at Daytona many times. So will Buescher get in? Will it be Priest? I tell you, I right now, if I had to lean who is going to make it in, I would say Bowman gets it in out of a good run and gets in on points. And I would say either Keselowski or Buescher will have a very good chance to win this race, possibly McDowell, to get that final playoff spot. So it should be a really exciting race on Saturday night in Daytona. Looking forward to that. BLS underscore PRP is where you can find all of those picks. All right, before we get to tennis, let's talk some industry news. As legendary bookmaker Jimmy Vaccaro from the South Point, he's from not far from here, just outside of Pittsburgh. He's going to be retiring from the business after 50 years. So congrats to Jimmy. He's a guy that, if you read a lot of articles where he's quoted in or you listen to him in interviews and stuff, he's an incredibly knowledgeable guy. So if you're in this industry like me, you will realize that guys like him are wealths of knowledge and just fountains of knowledge. So listen to as much as you can from a guy like that, and you will learn things, as they have seen just about everything there is to see from the old school bookmaking to the new generation of bookmaking. So Jimmy will be moving back to Pennsylvania to enjoy his retirement. He's going to be he's going to be turning 80 here, I believe, in the fall. He's known for a lot of interesting things. I mean, he was one of the first bookmakers, if not the first, to legally put up win total bets. He tells the story about how he had some guy that was a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, and he and his wife would come and visit, and he'd always talk about how many games would his Cowboys win and each and every year. And Jimmy's like, well, I'll put this number up, and you can bet it over or under. And he brought some big sack of money. I'm not getting all the details right of this story, but it's something like that. And brings in this big sack of money and wagers on it. And there you go. Win totals were born. And he also was one of the few books that were putting up the Mike Tyson fights, because Tyson was such a huge favorite. He had Mike Tyson priced at minus 4,200 in that loss to Buster Douglas. If you remember the big upset loss to Buster Douglas, that Jimmy had that one up. And he's also portrayed on The Simpsons too. One of the episodes of one of the first actual real humans that were ever seen on The Simpsons, when they had a bookmaking thing on there and played some fun with that. So congrats to him. Other bookmaking news, Boomer Sportsbook, a new sportsbook, a privately owned sportsbook opening in Nevada. They're going to start it out with a minus 105 juice. Some smart guys running this thing. Joe Asher, who used to be in charge of DraftKings, and Nick Bogdanovich. He is a sports betting Hall of Famer. Was at Will Hill for years and recently was at Circa. They're starting that book up, so I think you're going to see some pros going there. They're definitely going to take some business. So they and Circa are starting to cut into some business from some of the other books out there that have gotten play from some of the pros from you know, year in, year out. Follow-up news on this one. NBA Union pushing for limits on certain types of prop betting. Obviously, this is in response to the Porter scandal and some of the other ones, Rozier and the other guys that are, you know, speculated or believed to have been involved in some of this potential, just some bad acting, I guess you can say, to put it bluntly. Michael Porter Jr., the brother of the band Jaunte Porter, says this in a quote on a podcast recently, which doesn't do a whole lot to deter people from betting on this stuff or to doing point shaving type tactics for their individual props. This is a quote from Michael Porter Jr. Think about it. If you can get all your homies rich by telling, yo, bet 10K on my under this one game, I'ma act like I got an injury, and they all get a little bag. Some people come from nothing, and they think like that. That's what Michael Porter Jr., whose brother has been basically found guilty of tanking his own points and his own props, going under, faking an eye injury to cash unders on himself. So not a great speaking out against doing the wrong thing from Michael Porter. So Just incredible. And all the more reason to not trust the NBA in any capacity. Federal investigators from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania now. We talked about the Southern District of New York. Now we're in the Eastern District of Federal Court in Pennsylvania. Advanced there. Well, actually, I said federal court, but basically they are the attorney. They're the prosecutors from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania who will be taking this to court as they advance their probe into the point shaving and game fixing scandal. This is according to Sports Illustrated. They're nearing the indictment stage. A source stated there are going to be charges. It will be a national scope involving multiple programs. Some of the programs originally mentioned last season with suspicions of activities, of suspicious activity, that is, were Temple, New Orleans, Eastern Michigan, Mississippi Valley State. So basically what somebody's telling you is there's going to be some indictments handed out and there's going to be a lot of programs affected by this potential probe. So, well, it's not a potential probe. It is a probe. And the potential outcomes of this probe could be devastating to a lot of basketball programs. Recently, Yahoo's Ben Fox did a study on the biggest sports bets that were ever made, legal sports bets. And here's the top five. He did a very nice article. You can find it at yahoosports.com if you want to read more about it. And the number one was an $8 million wager on the Thunder at minus 700 at the MGM in Ohio to win the NBA championship this past year. It cashed out for $1.142 million. So you spent $8 million to win $1.142. That's pretty risky, especially you see how far the Pacers took them to Game 7. It would not have been a fun sweat there. The second one, $3.46 million on the Tampa Bay Bucks plus 3.5 in the Super Bowl against Kansas City. That was a DraftKings in Colorado, and that was by the one, the only, Mattress Mac. $2.72 million in profit for Mattress Mac. The third, $3.1 million on the Eagles, minus 700 to beat the Panthers in Week 14 last year. What a sweat that one was. Panthers driving late. Had a guy, I think they had a touchdown. It got called back or a guy dropped the wide open one. I kind of remember that game because I remember them talking about the amount of that was riding on it from Circa. This was taken in Circa in Kentucky. $3.1 million. And the bet won. It only won $442,000. So crazy that you would spend that kind of money for that small of a return. Then $3 million on the Eagles to win the Super Bowl in 2018. Plus 160 at MGM in Nevada. Winning profit on that one. $4.8 million. Thanks to Nick Foles and the Birds getting it done over Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And then the number five, biggest, richest sports bet of all time, legal sports bet. $3 million on the Astros to win the 2022 World Series at 10-1 by Mattress Mac once again. Paid $30 million. Now, that's a great bet right there. And I know he was doing it as a promotion, but, man, what a fantastic wager that was. 10-1 on the Astros. Notable NFL bets this week, $300,000 on the Bears over 8.5 wins. Oh, boy. Say oh, boy, because you'll figure out here in a couple of minutes when we talk about the NFC North. I'm a little worried about this now. Also, $3,000 on the Jets to win the Super Bowl at 200-1 at Caesars. That's just light that on fire. More big moves in NFL preseason games this week. The 49ers opened at 2.5, up to 5, and now all the way back down to Chargers minus 1. So a complete 6-point move on that one. So crazy stuff happening there in those preseason lines, as we told you from the last couple of weeks. Big moves in college football. Week 1, Texas and Ohio State from 50 on the total down to 47 in some spots. Julian Sayin named the quarterback for Ohio State. Is that mean anything to this? I don't know. I think you have a lot of uncertainty with both these teams coming in, so it makes sense to play the game under for the sharp players. I'm sure the public will get back on and start betting that 47 up to back up towards 50, I would gather. And then very little action on the Ireland game so far, with a very exciting matchup there. 98% of the handle expected to come in on the day of the game, which you would expect here in week zero. So how much these games get bet in week zero, you never really do know. All right. Keeping it rolling here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 140 here on the Watchdog Network from the Watchdog Pine Room Studios in downtown Wheeling. Hopefully you're getting ready for an enjoyable weekend, getting your last few bits of chores out of the way before you have to deal with the football season. So get your work done now, I guess, and have your weekends free here in the coming weeks. I guess that's what the point of the story is. Okay. Tennis, you got the U.S. Open kicking off on Monday. from up in Flushing, up in New York, right outside there in Queens. And should be an exciting tournament. You got a lot of players coming in here on good runs, some not so good runs. Yannick Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz will be the favorites in the men, as expected. Sinner had to pull out of the Cincinnati final against Alcaraz, who was up 5-love on him in the first set. He had an illness. Will this affect him at all here? I'm not sure. He's not playing in the mixed doubles right now at the U.S. Open, so perhaps he's going to be a little bit weak, but I don't know. He's a minus 105. You can find him around plus 105. It actually took a little swing up the plus money when he was sick. Alcaraz, you can find between 125 and 145. They are the clear-cut top choices here. It's going to be really hard for me to get to another guy winning this tournament. Something would have to happen. Sinner would have to stay sick. Alcaraz would have to have something go wrong with him, an injury or at least a small injury. For one of these guys, I just don't see how they don't meet in the finals. You can find that at plus price. I saw right around even money. I saw a couple minus 110s, but I did find an even money out there. So if you can find that, I hate to recommend that kind of stuff because it's just boring and it's just not what it's not the way to gain an advantage in this racket. But sometimes you just have to evaluate things and you have to apply logic and you have to be willing to say you got to put thoughts aside, what you want to see aside, and go with what makes the most sense. And Sinner and Alcaraz in the final, as much as I don't want that to happen, I think that's the most logical outcome. Sasha Zverev has played very well lately. He is a cut above the next tier below. So right now in men's tennis, you have Sinner and Alcaraz operating in a different stratosphere. Basically, if you want to do it based on the planets, you would say they are Mercury right now. Novak Djokovic is Venus. And you would say the United States, Earth, Earth, the third planet from the sun, is Sasha Zverev. And then I would say you have to drop about all the way past Mars, past probably Uranus, Saturn, Neptune, Jupiter, all the way back out. Maybe Uranus or Neptune, possibly, to where you would then find the next set of guys. Jack Draper, Daniil Medvedev, whose game is awful. He's a defending he's a former champion here. Ben Shelton, not good enough to win this. Taylor Fritz, not good enough to win this. And then you start getting down to Jacob Mensik, very young. Tiafo can't win. Rublev can't win. Tommy Paul can't win. Demonor maybe can make it to the semis. Rune has plateaued. And then you just go on and on down through these guys, and they can't win. So you basically have two guys and then a third and a fourth that possibly can win, because Novak is still not done yet. If the things would set up right for him, he potentially, if somehow somebody would get hot serving and knock out one of these guys and he was in that side and he could get there, he could still do it. Zverev would need a couple breaks his way, but he's still on par with these guys. He's not going to get embarrassed by these guys. Everybody else is going to get embarrassed by these guys. So throw out those guys. The only thing I can recommend right now, I would say fade Ben Shelton. He's going to make a decent run here, but his net game is just not good enough. Sasha Zverev just destroyed him the other night in Cincinnati, if you watch that match. I mean, just destroyed him. And if he can't beat him, he's not going to beat Sinner or Alcaraz. So you just have to apply the logic here. Taylor Fritz, same situation. Just not good enough. He can't beat these guys. He's just not going to do it. Not in five sets. Jacob Mensik, this is a good young player. I think he can make the round of 16 or the quarterfinals. So depending on when the draw comes out later this week, we'll figure it out, and maybe I'll use him. BLS underscore PRP is where you're going to want to be for these, because you got to see the draws first before you can make any real predictions. Karin Khachanov's had a great season. He's 100-1. He can't win this, but he could possibly make it through to the quarters or the semis if he gets the right draw. There's no doubt about it, because he can serve with these guys a little bit. He can't really break them. His net game isn't good enough. Giovanni Paricard, one of the most incredible servers you'll ever find. He's like 80-1. He can't win this because his game is so bad. If he plays against a really good tactical player, he'll get killed. But if his draw is good and it's just guys who do what he does as far as serving and trying to break one time, he can beat those kind of players. And it all comes down to matchups. Gael Monfils could be a guy you could see upset a little bit. He's always around a plus price. Sebastian Baez had very good numbers from what I looked at for hard courts. Could be a surprise, too. Again, not going to win. He's 200-1, but potentially could make a little bit of a run. The women's side, not as cut and dry. Sabalenka has been very unsharp lately. She has not played her best at all. So many unforced errors. It reminds me of her very early days. She's kind of becoming a head case again. She's struggling in her own mind. Hopefully she can weed that out over the next few days, but she's really not been it at her A game. Now, that being said, her stats still bear out. She is incredible. Her avoidance of break points is phenomenal. Her tie-breaking stats are phenomenal. She is statistically better than everybody except for returns with Iga Swiatek. She dominates every statistical category, so she still might be able to just make it to the semis just based on sheer talent, which I want to pick her, but at plus 250, a little bit low. That's a little bit higher of a number than last year because she was playing a lot better tennis last year, and her and Coco Gauff had their long run. Swiatek, 3-1, she's playing pretty good right now. Can't say otherwise that she's a cheater, though, and I will not bet her. 3-1, too short of a price for her. This is her not as great surface, so I think she is beatable. Mira Andreeva, she seems to be wearing down. I really want to pick her here, 8-1, but it's just too short. She seems like she's so young still. It's like this whole long season with so much tennis. She's been playing so many deep into tournaments and playing well. I feel like it's catching up with her a little bit. She's taking some time off here leading up to this, so maybe that can refresh her a little bit. I still think she makes a decent run, but it's going to be tough. Naomi Osaka, who I'm not a fan of by any means, but she's 16-1 here. She's a former winner. She can play. Her game is starting to come back. I think she's somebody who could be very dangerous should she get the right draw, as much as that pains me. Victoria Mboko, the Canadian girl. If you watched her up in Montreal, she wins this tournament as the hometown favorite up in Montreal. She's 9-3 on hard courts in a very abbreviated start to her pro career. Very impressive girl athletically, and she really had the mental fortitude to hang around these matches. What will this be like for a Grand Slam? I don't know. It's a whole different ballgame, but I think she could be dangerous depending on draw. Players I'll be fading. Jessie Pegula just isn't good enough. Emma Navarro, who I think is okay. Her serving's just not been good enough. Karolina Mikova, coming back from injury. I'm curious to see about her, what draw she'll get. She could potentially make some noise. She started to come into form over the last month, so I think her game is starting to round back in. Daniel Collins will be another one who always seems to play well here. So those are some names we'll keep an eye on as the draw is approaching here in the next 48 hours at the U.S. Open. So be sure and don't miss those, BLS_PRP. All right, horse racing now. We got the Traverse Stakes. It's a Midsummer Derby, and man, what a bust this has turned out to be. Just 5 horses in this. Journalism will not go to this race after Connections talk smack on Sovereignty not coming to a few races leading up to this. Now journalism's not coming. Now journalism has run a lot of races, so I totally understand that. But a field right now that is very, very, very uneventful right now. You got Magnitude to number 1 for Steve Asmussen. Is it 2-1? I don't really understand this. This horse has very little chance to beat Sovereignty, if you ask me. Now, he has won the Iowa Derby, which means nothing. He has won the Risen Star, which was a lead up to the Kentucky Derby and that stuff, and he didn't have enough points to get in anyway, so he did not participate in the Triple Crown races. So maybe they're thinking they waited on him and he's going to be a pace setter here and go gate the wire here at this 1.25-mile race at Saratoga on Saturday. I don't agree with it. I don't think he has a chance. I think this is a walkover race for Sovereignty. Again, I hate giving out that kind of stuff. We get to 2, Bracket Buster for Vicky Oliver and Luis Saez. 4th in the Haskell behind Journalism. Really didn't contend. He was beaten 8 lengths. Just not going to be good enough here. Strategic Focus, the 3, Chad Brown and Flavian Pratt. This horse has only ran 3 times, and he's not bad. He won the Curlin Stakes, he finished 3rd in the Curlin Stakes, the Chancer McPatrick, who I'm not a fan of. I just don't see this horse having enough experience to beat Sovereignty. Sovereignty, of course, the winner of the Kentucky Derby, the winner of the Belmont Stakes, the winner of the Jim Danny's, won 3 in a row. Impressively, this horse has really got it together. And Junior Alvarado, as I said on the show many times, when he develops a kinship with a horse and it is talented, he doesn't lose very often. He has it figured out with Sovereignty. And then McAfee, who was a highly touted horse, but he disappointed at the West Virginia Derby a couple of weeks ago. Johnny Velasquez comes in to ride for Rick Dutrow. He got beat 2 and 4.5. He was 2nd beaten 4.5 lengths. Chunk of Gold beat him, and Chunk of Gold not all that good of a horse. So I got to throw McAfee out. I think he's all right pedigree wise, but he can't win here. He finished third in the Ohio Derby and second in the Peter Pan to Hill Road. So I just can't. I just don't see it. Another race that's on the card that interests me a little bit: the Four Go, which is race 12, is a 7 furlong on the dirt. Bookham Dano 8-5 favorite for Derek Ryan, Paco Lopez. Horse that's got a lot of notoriety across the throughout this season. Pretty decent horse, a sprinting type horse. But I'm taking a shot against him. There's a number 7 called Mullican Road for Rudy Brissett. Flavian Pratty, 7-2. He ran second behind Bookham Dano to Vanderbilt, and he was solid at the Churchill Downs back in May. He's also in the Breeders' Cup Sprint and ran third, so I like him. That's the number 7. And then also the number 8, Scotland, for Bill Mott, Jr. Alvarado, 12-1. Second shot off the layoff for him, and he had speed and faded to Travers last year. He's a pretty talented horse at one time in his career. And then in the race 10, the Alan Jerkins, also 7 furlongs, a G1 race. Barnes returns to the track. First time since April for Bob Baffert. He ran second to Journalism in the Santa Anita Derby. Baffert's given him time off since then. He gets Jose Ortiz. Baffert's won this 2 times before. And I think he could beat the favorite, number 1, Patch Adams. So that's number 3, Barnes, in race number 10. And also thought Matticat Road, who was on the Derby trail for Bob Baffert, he is the 7 horse in that race number 10, the Alan Jerkins. He's 6-1. Johnny V's aboard for him. So potentially that horse can come back and have a good run. He ran well at the Woody Stevens to Patch Adams. He ran a good second, and he also ran second to Pat DeMile back in May at Churchill Downs. So those are some horse plays. I'll have those up at BLS_PRP. All right, rounding into the football portion of the card. Quickly, Canadian football. Again, we were good on sides last week, not so good on totals, but we're going to go with Edmonton this week, -3 against Ottawa. We're also going to go under 53.5 in that game. We're going to go with the BC Lions, -3.5 on the road. And I got a slight lean to Saskatchewan in a great matchup between them and Calgary. Calgary 6-3, Saskatchewan 8-1. It's a pick'em game. I'm going to go under the 50.5 there. And Saskatchewan impressed me last week. They're playing very good, so lean towards Saskatchewan. Soccer-wise, got a few plays in the soccer, the round football. English Premier League, got Chelsea and West Ham. Got Chelsea can score a goal last week, but West Ham is so bad. I just don't see any way. Who do we have? Sunderland. Yeah, Sunderland makes their return to the EPL. Very impressive performance by them. So they get the job done, winning, I think, 3-0. I think they beat West Ham. So nice performance there. West Ham in this derby, I don't think they have a chance. I think Chelsea wins this game by at least 2 goals. So we'll go Chelsea on the Asian handicap, -0.75. And Chelsea's won the last 3 against West Ham in impressive fashion. Bournemouth and Wolves. I'm going to go with Bournemouth here, -130. Wolves is going to be a fade team for us, at least early on. Now, they played very hard, but they are just not a very good side. I think they could have some trouble here. Bournemouth, very buttoned up. Not sure they had the firepower they did last year. They definitely don't have the back line that they did. This could be a potential over game because Wolves could give up some goals, and Wolves might actually get on the score sheet here with Bournemouth's defensive troubles. Man City and Spurs, that should be a great game. Going to go over in that one. You can find 2.5s out there. If not, I'd even go over the 3. Spurs look very good. We were high on them from a future standpoint, and City cashed a nice ticket for us. We had them last week on the Asian handicap. They won the game 4-0. Brentford and Aston Villa. We'll take Villa +115 here. Brentford, sad as it is, Brentford could be a team that could be in a lot of trouble this year. They just don't have the horses. They lost their manager. Things are not looking very bright for Brentford to this point. Burnley and Sunderland, like this game under. Burnley, all-out defensive team. Sunderland are going to have a little bit of a hangover. They won their big game, their return to the Stadium of Light in the EPL. They got to go on the road this time, so it could be a little bit tricky for them. And I will take Burnley and Sunderland under the total of, if you can find a 2.5 or 3, which you're going to find at least a 2.25, but probably even a 2.25. I think this has 1-1 or 1-0 written all over it. Arsenal and Leeds. Arsenal did nothing to win their match the other day. They got very lucky. Poor goalkeeping from Manchester United. We're going to go under this in this one. Leeds defended very well, got a gift penalty. And Arsenal, to me, didn't do a whole lot. They didn't impress me. We'll go under the 3 between Arsenal and Leeds. Palace and Nottingham Forest. Didn't really have a player. Thought both these teams are pretty decent. I leaned to the under in this game. Palace played all right defensively against Chelsea last week. Forest has a very good back line, although they did surrender 1 goal, which burned our under in their previous match. We did have them, though, so that was good. Everton and Brighton going under in that one, under 3. Fulham and Manchester United. I'm going to take Manchester United here. It's probably a mistake because Zach Craven Cottage could be tough. United, I thought they looked very good early on in their match, and then it just slowly got worse and worse and worse. I might be way off on them. +125. is probably a decent price, but we'll see. Fulham is going to be pesky at home. Newcastle and Liverpool. Liverpool should win this one too. Newcastle just doesn't look as good as they were last year, so we'll go with Liverpool. Even money, get them at a plus price to go on the road and win. In the championship, Ipswich, I have Ipswich plus 105. We're going to go with West Bromwich minus 120 against Portsmouth. Ipswich playing Preston North End. And then Wrexham. I'm not going to support Wrexham very often, but they are playing Sheffield Wednesday this week. So that could be good. You can find them on the handicap. They'll probably win this game at least 2-0. And then League One. Let's go down to Luton and Cardiff. Both teams to score. That's a Saturday morning game. And then Peterborough and Bradford City. We'll take Bradford City plus 135. We're going to go over with Plymouth, Argyle, and Blackpool, as Blackpool has now surrendered 11 goals already this year, and Plymouth has already given up 9. So let's think that there's going to be at least 3 or 4 goals in this one, so we'll go over 2.5. Plymouth and Blackpool. Stockport will take them against Burton. We're going to go on the Asian handicap there to get a better price. And then Wycombe against Reading. We'll take Wycombe. Reading just drew 1-1, which they probably wouldn't have expected to do. We'll take Wycombe around even money in League Number 1. All right, let's finish it off with, I believe, what do we got? Australian rules football, and then we'll get into the Week 0 card in the NFL, AFC and NFC North divisions. Final week of the AFL, if you can believe it. Everything comes down to this, and we'll start it off with the game on Friday. It'll be the Melbourne Demons and the Collingwood Magpies. If you miss this one, again, BLS underscore PRP will have it. Collingwood, Bobby Hill's back in the lineup. That is huge. They've played very well. At least they played well enough to have a chance of winning last week after being very short man. So I think that you'll say this is a spot where Collingwood has to win. I mean, this is a game they totally need. They if they can win this, and they can win it by a large enough margin, they can hold fourth place. So I think that Collingwood wins this game minus 21.5. We're taking the Magpies over 164.5 against the very, very poor Melbourne Demons, who will finish their season up with another loss. Gold Coast Suns at the Port Adelaide Power to be Gold Coast minus 24.5. 169.5 is the total. Gold Coast, lots on the line for them. They got two games basically in a 7-day period, as they have to play this game and then they got to play a makeup game next Wednesday. So a lot on the line for them. They should win this game. They're laying 24.5. I'm taking the Suns. They're in ninth place right now. They've got to win this game. So if they win both, they could get as high as fourth. If they go 1-1, they're probably in at the eighth spot. But they got to start by winning this game here against Port Adelaide. So we'll go with the Suns, and we'll go over 169.5. Adelaide Crows at the North Melbourne Kangaroos. The Crows coming in first place. They win. They're the first place team, which is very nice. Minus 36.5 is the spread. 177.5 is the total. Adelaide, this would be their first minor title since 2017, so they're definitely going to want that. I think the Crows roll in this game over 177.5, as well as North Melbourne gives up a ton of points. Geelong Cats and the Richmond Tigers. Although I will say North Melbourne, back to them, a nice win for us last week with the Kangaroos. Geelong at Richmond, Geelong minus 16.5, 177.5 is the total on this one. If they win, they guarantee second. They could get first if Adelaide would lose to North Melbourne, but that's very, very unlikely. To me, it looks like Geelong's probably pretty much locked in. So we'll go with the Cats minus 16.5 and over 177.5. I think Richmond will score a little bit at home. Sydney, disappointing year for them at West Coast. They could finish up with a boom. I would probably lean West Coast. They got to make a long trip over to the western part, into Perth area to take on the Eagles. And, Swans, they were eliminated last week, and they're probably kind of just irritated right now. They're laying 29.5 on the road, 165.5. I'm really going to go over here. I think there'll be some points. I don't think either team's going to be too inspired. But West Coast may give a little bit of a fight in front of the home crowd. St. Kilda at GWS. GWS minus 30.5, 172.5. GWS in sixth place. Their win and in scenario right now for them. They played well last week and got the victory that they needed. I'm going to lay the 30.5 and go over 172.5. Fremantle at Western. Western minus 22.5. The total 171.5. Fremantle was absolutely embarrassed last week. Now, they do have some good players out. They were crushed by the Lions, Brisbane Lions last week, who we had. And I told you that was a bad number, and it certainly looked to be one as they crushed Fremantle. They seem to be in big trouble. Western needs this win to be in. They're in eighth right now. They've got Gold Coast on their heels. They got GWS to contend with. They have Fremantle, the team right in front of them, who they're playing. I think Western crushes them here. I think Western might win this game by 40-plus. If he can find adjusted numbers, I'd play it, and I like this game under 171.5. Frio couldn't move the ball at all through the midfield. Western will be able to exploit that, and I think Western wins this game big, and it stays under 171.5. Hawthorne at Brisbane, as I mentioned, Brisbane minus 9.5, total 169.5. Brisbane, if they focus, they're as good as it gets right now. They were back at it last week, crushing Fremantle, and I think they'll do that again here against Hawthorne. Minus 9.5, we'll go under 169.5 here. I think they'll play very buttoned up here. This is going to be like another finals game for them, as they now have to say, we got to show up every single game. There's no stubbing our toes, no overlooking opponents. We got to take care of the win and secure this third seed and have a very favorable trip into the finals. And then the Essendon Gold Coast game next week. I imagine Gold Coast is going to crush them. No number on that yet, but Suns can be fourth or eighth, so they really need to win that game. If the Hawthorne Hawks lose, they could drop all the way down to eighth, and I think they probably will. So one more week of exciting action for the AFL before we head into the playoffs. So very excited. BLS underscore PRP can find all that action. We were up 24.25 units, 12-6 in the AFL last week. College football week zero. It's finally here. Yippee. We got a game in Dublin, Ireland to start things off. Not much to speak of here. Iowa State and Kansas State. K-State minus 3. Total 49.5. This is at DeViva Stadium in Dublin. I think Kansas State probably is a little bit better physically, at least on the interior line, than Iowa State. So I'd lean towards the K-State. What the hell are they called? Are they the what the hell are they called? Wildcats. Jeez, that's bad. 49.5 the total. That's where I'm looking here. I like the game under the total. I think these teams jet lag. I think you'll see both teams playing for field goals. I don't think either team's coaches are going to be too aggressive. They're going to want to start the season off with a win. This game has boredom and nap time written all over it. I'll go under 49.5 in Dublin at noon on Saturday. On Fox at 6:30, it's Fresno and Kansas. Nick and coaches Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas minus 13, the total 50.5 in this game. Kansas has a lot of speed. And I think Fresno, with a veteran quarterback, they might be able to score a little bit too. So I like over 50.5 in this game. Maybe lean Fresno State. I know the guys would say no way Kansas will roll, but I like the over in that one. Sam Houston and Western Kentucky. This is a game we gave out several weeks ago. Could have maybe got a little bit better number. Western Kentucky minus 10 right now, total 60.5. I lean to the over, but I really like Western Kentucky. This is a very good team. We picked them to win their conference, picked them over their win total. I think Western Kentucky could do some damage. We gave this back out in July, so we're on the Hilltoppers at home against Sam Houston State. And then Stanford at Hawaii. I like Stanford in this game. Both these teams expected to struggle. Got Hawaii minus 2.5 here, total 51.5. I'm going under 51.5, and I'm going to take a small position on Stanford to maybe win this game outright. Next week's games, a couple of look-ahead spots that we gave out earlier on previous shows. Syracuse plus 13.5, that's now up to 14 against Tennessee next week. Temple minus 2, that's now Temple minus 3.5 against UMass. We have Temple, Arizona minus 13.5, that's still 13.5 against Hawaii next week. Obviously, people want to see what Hawaii is going to do. Also, a couple of add-on plays for week one. We mentioned East Carolina a few weeks ago about how we thought they'd be a little bit better. They take on NC State. That line now down to 12.5 from over, it was around 14 or 15. So that's dropping. Got on ECU plus 13.5. Now down to 12.5. So I'm on East Carolina there. I think that could be a problem. And then Minnesota, who a team who I think will win some games, and I think they'll probably win this game. But 16.5 against a very good Buffalo team is a little too much for me. PJ Fleck doesn't seem to blow guys out anywhere, blow teams out. So I think Buffalo plus the 16.5, both of those games, Buffalo and ECU on Thursday. So we're taking two of the dogs, the Pirates and the Bulls, on Thursday night of next week with college football week one. Already a quick turnaround there. So you got a couple other interesting line moves for Thursday's games. You got Boise State from 9.5 opener down to 6 against South Florida. Don't know what to make of that. You got Wyoming open 9.5 against Akron. That's now down to 7.5. You got Rutgers opening at 10.5 against Ohio, now up to 14. And then, as I mentioned, Buffalo, Minnesota was laying 18.5. That down to 16 or 16.5. So some good line moves there in week number one. Again, BLS underscore PRP is where we'll have all the picks. Of course, we'll preview the full card of week one next week, but I wanted to at least get those Thursday games in there that I like before next week's show because you'll miss them. But now it's time to talk some NFL. So again, BLS underscore PRP, you can find all these plays, everything we give on the show, predated and postdated. If you want, before we actually have the show up and recorded, they're up. So check them out. All right, let's go to the NFC North here as we wrap up show number 140 of Bettors Last Stand here on the Watchdog Network from the Watchdog Pine Room Studios. NFC North, I didn't have a whole lot of bets in this division, but I do have a strong opinion. So many people on the Green Bay Packers here. I'm stunned at this. I'm stunned. Just tons of people on the Packers. It surprises me quite a bit. We'll start off with the Chicago Bears. I thought the Bears were going to win 8 or 9 games. I liked them over their win total, but the more I looked at their schedule, it was like, man, I don't know if I could pull the trigger. I think I still will go over the 8.5. I think they win 9. I before Caleb Williams played well in that preseason game, I thought the Bears were going to be pretty good. I think the rest of these teams all are, I don't want to say plateaued, but how much better can Minnesota be than they were last year? I mean, maybe they can be. They've got a good roster. Detroit last year seemed like their year. They're a little healthier maybe. They got lost their coordinators. I don't know. Green Bay couldn't beat any good teams last year. They just beat the bad teams. And I think that'll continue. I think they regress. So the Bears, to me, seem like they had the most upside in this division to improve. And I'm not going to say I love Caleb Williams, but I think he's pretty good. And I thought that before that preseason game, they got good players on offense. I mean, DJ Moore, Roma Dunes, I mean, they have good players. They got Loveland from Michigan now. They got Kmet already. Not that he's that great, but I think this team can do a lot of good. And I think that the Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, you know, them two meshing together as the coach and apprentice, I think the Bears look all right. So I'm going with the Bears over their 8.5. Next team, the Lions. Again, I'm not hating on the Lions. I think they could definitely be a good playoff team. I thought their schedule was a little tricky. 10.5 is a little high for me. So I would lean to the under there, but I'm not going to give that out as an official play. I think the Lions will be a very good team. They're going to be a playoff team, barring some sort of injury issue or of some sort. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Lions are safely a playoff team. I just don't know how much upside. And can they win 11 games in a tricky division? I would say no. Green Bay, this is the team that I'm down on this division. Complete opposite take of most other people in here. I just don't see a world where Green Bay is going to be a contender. I've watched this team play for the last few years, and they really do nothing for me. Jordan Love is just okay. When he doesn't get pressured, he can throw a decent ball. But there's so many just unremarkable things about this guy. I just don't see it. I don't like the coach, LaFleur. Do I think they're terrible? No. Do I think they're good? Absolutely not. Do I think they can win this division? Absolutely not. I think they'll finish last in this division, and I don't even think it'll be close. I just don't. I like Josh Jacobs. That's about all. They have all these receivers, but their quarterback's not good enough. It doesn't make a difference. Their schedule's hard. I mean, they open with Detroit, Washington. Then they got to go to Cleveland and Dallas. And I know everybody laughs at Cleveland and Dallas, but those aren't going to be easy places to go win. Then they got to play the Bengals, who I do think they'll win that game. Then they got to go to Arizona and Pittsburgh. So, again, other tricky spot. I don't like this team. And then the end of their schedule gets very, very hard. They have a run in there where they got to play like Philly, Minnesota, and Detroit, and Chicago all in like a 5-week period. So I don't like this team at all. I would even go under a total of 7 or 6 on this team. I think they are lucky to win 6 games. 6 games to me is a good year for Green Bay. I'll go under 9.5. That is my best bet in the NFC North. And then Minnesota. I like J.J. McCarthy. I've liked him a lot. I know a lot of people that I know that are Notre Dame and Ohio State fans detested this guy, but I thought he was going to be a very good pro from his college days. He just looked like a guy that was in command out there in a really caveman offense in Michigan. I think that he really gets a chance to open things up here. They got a very good roster. How well will we do right away? I don't know. He's got some issues at receiver right now, some injuries and some suspensions, so that could be a little bit of a concern. I don't hate Minnesota. I think they're going to win right around 8 or 9 games, so their 8.5 win total will probably be I don't know. I would probably lean slightly to the over, but it's not going to be by much, so slight lean to the over there. As far as division champion goes, I really find myself leaning between the Vikings or the Bears here, but the Lions might be the safest play. I do like a lot of teams. I like everybody in this division except for Green Bay. That is clear. And then let's go on to the AFC North as we wind things down. Everybody wants to know about the Steelers, what I think about them. Do I think the Steelers will be great? No. Do I think they'll suck? No. But I do think the Ravens are really good. The roster's very good. I think they'll win 12 games if they stay healthy. Now, Jackson just left practice today with some sort of injury, but I don't know. Derrick Henry got weapons, got a really good defense now, really good secondary. They got a lot to like here, Baltimore. They won't be able to win at all because of Jackson. He's not a good enough quarterback to win in the playoffs. He just never has been and probably never will be, much as it pains me to say. But, yeah, so Baltimore over their 11.5. I think they win this division for fun. Cleveland, the next team, I really am. I think they'll win at least 6 games here. Flacco's the quarterback. That's not a surprise to me at all. You heard me talk about that back in the winter before. It would have been after football. But when they got Flacco back, there was no doubt he was going to be the starter. Kenny Pickett was never going to start for this team. It's a 0% chance. He could have found Flacco at like 12-1 to be the starter. I didn't understand what they were thinking there. I mean, they brought him in for a reason. He's going to bridge till their next guy, whether it's Shador, whether it's Gabriel. I don't know that yet. They don't know that yet. But Flacco's the quarterback. He'll be stable. They're going to get Cincinnati. I think they'll win that game. That they probably won't beat Baltimore, but then they get Green Bay. So they can start out 2-1. So I like the Browns over their 5.5 win total. People sleeping on them. I don't get it. Then you got the Steelers. I think the Steelers win right around 8 or 9 games like they always do. Mike Tomlin, I do like him a lot against the Jets. I think they'll kill Justin Fields. I think they'll make his life a living hell. And I think Rodgers will have a chip on his shoulder and play very, very well. Then they play Seattle at New England. It'll be tricky. And then Minnesota. So not the easiest start to the schedule. But then they get Cleveland and Cincinnati and Green Bay and Indianapolis. Like, that's a good little run right there. He could win at least 3 of those games, probably all 4 of them. So I think the Steelers are all right. Would I have paid for the talent that they got on defense? No. I think their secondary could be pretty good, which is beneficial against stat producer Burrow or Mr. Gun It Down the Field and Don't Worry About the Game Flow or anything. But I don't know. Steelers, if they can run the ball, they'll be decent. If they can't run the ball, they're not going to be that good. So that's the key to their whole team, is will their offensive line and can they run the ball? I just don't know about their running backs, which would be a serious concern. Defense will be decent. I think T.J. Watt's about finished. I think Cam Hayward's about finished. But their secondary will give them an opportunity to cover a little bit, and maybe some of their younger pass rushers can get in there and make some plays. I think they probably have a shot of finishing second in the division. I think Cincinnati and Cleveland will fight it out for last. I'm under 9.5. I'm under 8.5 on Cincinnati. I'm under 7.5. I think this team stinks. I don't like the coach. I don't like the quarterback. Ja'Marr Chase is the best player in the league, though, in my opinion. Like, the best player, not just best wide receiver. To me, he's the best player in the league. He is the only reason that people think Joe Burrow's good. If you really look, Jake Browning did the same exact thing as Burrow did when Burrow was out. So all I got to do is tell you that. You should watch and then look at the games that Burrow plays and Ja'Marr Chase doesn't play and tell me how good he is then. So anyway, they already know I'm not a Bengal guy. I don't have anything against Cincinnati as a town. I like it a lot, a matter of fact. And I have no issue with the Bengals as a franchise, except I think they're poorly run. They're like the Pirates of the NFL. Their owner's cheap. They're going to lose their best defensive player. They got just dissension in the team already. They've paid way too much for offensive guys. And really, they're like niche offensive guys other than Chase. It's like Burrow is only good because of Chase. So you're paying him way too much money to be just a stat producer. So that, to me, he's Jeff George, he's Ryan Fitzpatrick with a really good receiver in a time where you just throw a lot more. So will this team win any games? They'll probably win a few shootouts, but I think they win 6, maybe. If they win 7, I'll be surprised. Just not in on Cincinnati at all. So I think they'll probably finish close to last, if not last, in the division, right above or below the Cleveland Browns. So Baltimore is my pick there. And back to the Vikings, I had Jordan Mason over his rush touchdowns. We gave that out several weeks ago. I think he's going to be a very good sleeper in fantasy football, too. He's going to score a lot for them. So keep an eye on that. We'll talk a little bit more about fantasy next week on the show because we've wrapped up all the divisions. Again, you can find all these at BLS_PRP. That's going to do it for us here on show number 140 from the Pioneer Watchdog Studios. Have a great weekend. High school football coming up next week here on the Watchdog Network. So stay tuned for that. Follow us at Pine Room Studios, at BLS_PRP, and at the Watchdog Network, WV. So have a wonderful weekend. Best of luck in your wagers, and we will see you next week here on Bettors Last Stand. Thanks for listening to the Watchdog.